On the road to Warburton, there's a little place called Wesburn. Does anyone know Wesburn? A few people know Wesburn. The thing that most people used to know Wesburn for was the Baptist Church, or more particularly, the sign outside the front of the Baptist Church, because they used to have this sign that said, Wesburn Baptist Church, independent, premillennial, fundamental. And if ever there was a sign designed to put you off coming to church, I reckon it was that one. I was certainly never game to go there. The only bit that gave me any comfort was the line that said independent, because that meant they were not a member church of our Baptist Union. In an obscure sort of way, the sign reminded me of a bit of a song. It was a song that used an Edith Piaf tune for a spoof. It was written by Greg Champion, and it was just called The French Song. And it was just a collection of randomly sorted, vaguely familiar French words sung with mock seriousness. And it was very funny. So the first line was, Pâté, escargot, soupe du jour, cordon bleu, chic, couture, fête accomplie, maison, crème de menthe, Marcel Masson, meringue, blancmange, badeau, gauche, gay paoui, garçon. And the sign out of Wesburn always made me want to write another funny song full of weird theological words that nobody understands. You know, it's sort of premillennial, fundamentalist, eschaton, propitiation, perichoresis, exegesis, glossolalia. There we go. First verse, just like that. So, anyway, why am I taking the mickey out of the good folk at Wesburn who have, after all, since repented of their bizarre sign and taken it down? Well, mainly because the second line on their old sign kind of connected with what's going on in today's readings, the line premillennial. Just as a matter of interest, how many of you are confident that you know what premillennial means? I thought it might be Gilbert. Yeah. It's a term that refers to a particular view about the biblical prophecies about the end of the world. And if you happen to be into those particular debates, you can be a premillennialist, a postmillennialist, or even an amillennialist. Sort of, we could come up with an acronym for it, a bit like LGBT, right? All the different views on the eschatology. And it all centres about whether you think that a thousand-year reign of the saints that is mentioned in a verse in the book of Revelation is going to come before Jesus returns or after Jesus returns or not at all. And personally, I'm an I-haven't-got-the-foggiest-idea-realist. And if any of you think that that question is so important that we better sort it out and put up a sign out in the front about it, then I suspect that you are going to be rather annoyed by the rest of my sermon and probably disgusted by what's actually on our sign out the front. But each year, this first Sunday of the season of Advent brings us Bible readings full of images of the coming end of the world as we know it and the establishment of the eternal reign of God. And in evocative and apocalyptic language, we hear of the moon dripping with blood and the stars falling from the sky and the new human riding in on a cloud with power and great glory. And every year when faced with that, most of us who don't know too much about premillennialism or postmillennialism cringe a bit and wonder whether there's anything at all we can say about it that doesn't sound a bit like that crazy old sign at the Wesburn Baptist Church. Bizarre speculations about the end of the world tend to come in waves. Many of us remember how intense some of the end of the world fanaticism was when the year 2000 was approaching. But apart from a few computer glitches, it passed without any new apocalypse, and even the computer glitches were less than everybody had feared. Nowadays, the end of the world speculation seems to relate to global terrorism, Donald Trump, China, or climate change. And the climate change one is the easiest to relate to the apocalyptic imagery of the Bible, because faced with unprecedented bushfires and the like, the old line about turn or burn is starting to sound like just sensible environmental planning. But you don't have to look too far to see what happens to people who get caught up in the fervour about the end of the world. There were a few really high-profile ones a couple of decades ago, like the Heaven's Gate cult with their UFO suicide pact, and the Branch Davidians dying together in the Waco, Texas inferno. They kind of made the signboard at Wesleyan Baptist look almost sensible and mainstream by comparison. So what do we need to know about the eschaton, the last things, or the grand finale of all time? Well, I reckon that there are only two things that you need to know for sure about it. And these two things seem to be what most of the biblical writings on the subject are saying. The first thing that you need to know for sure is that it is all in the hands of the loving and merciful Jesus. And the second thing you need to know for sure about it is that there aren't any more things you can know for sure about it. That's it, plain and simple. You don't need to know when it's going to be. Jesus himself said that he didn't know when it was going to be. You just need to live your life so that you'll be found living faithfully when the day comes. And towards the end of tonight's gospel reading, we heard Jesus warning against thinking that no one's watching and there's no consequences, and then living abusively because you think you can get away with it. He says it could catch up with you before you realise. And again, that just sounds like good sense in light of what we're now seeing with climate change, etc. But on the other hand, if you're dancing to the tune of God's Spirit and the day comes, you'll be found strong of heart, healthy of mind, full of life, and living just as you were created to be. If not, you could be found wasted, shallow, and listless with the life that you were given as a gift, squandered. If you're living life as a gratefully received gift, you'll be found full of integrity, free of greed, anxiety, or compulsion, and living at peace with those around you. And if not, more likely to be found drowning in anxiety, narcissism, and nastiness. So no, you don't need to know when the end is coming. Whether it's tomorrow or in 1,000 years, live consciously, honestly, simply, mercifully, in gratitude for the love that you've been given in Jesus. Of course, the craving to know the details comes partly from curiosity and actually mostly from insecurity. Having seen so many dreams shattered and hopes come to nothing, we long to have confidence in what the future will hold. We want to know the details in advance, perhaps to inoculate ourselves against further hurts and disappointments. So why does God withhold them from us? It doesn't sound like an unreasonable desire. Well, although we may not get the details, God does not withhold grounds for the confidence that we need. All you need for confidence in the future is to know whose hands the future is held in. Think about it for a moment. Let me give you a parallel. Picture the people who turn up at Tullamarine Airport for one of those Qantas mystery flights. Do they still do those Qantas mystery flights? I don't actually know, but for those people who turned up for those flights, there's a great deal of uncertainty about their immediate future. They're about to get in a large tin can and hurtle through the sky and end up who knows where. But do they lack confidence for the future? Not at all. They're excited and expectant, confident that they're going to have a really good time. The uncertainty about the destination is actually part of the fun. And they have no fear because they trust that the people who organise these things can operate aeroplanes safely and are not going to drop them in the middle of the Simpson Desert with a map and a litre of water to walk home. But how different would it be if the mystery was who's going to be flying the plane? If you knew that part of the mystery was that there was only a 50% chance that a qualified pilot would actually be on board the plane, and even then, and only a 40% chance that she'd actually be in the cockpit, how many of you would be willing to turn up for the mystery flight then? Probably not. The gospel is not good news because it predicts a bright, shiny future where all the details are secured and locked in and explained in advance and nothing can alter them. The gospel is good news because it promises that the future is in the hands of Jesus. And therefore, it is a future based on the love and faithfulness of God that we have known in Jesus. In Jesus, we have seen the human face of God. We have seen the human face of God who will embrace us when we thought we were untouchable. We have seen the human God who will heal us when we had given up all hope. We have seen the human God who will soften our hearts when we had lost faith in our own ability to love. We have seen the human God who will point out pathways of peace and reconciliation even in places as intransigent as Syria and Afghanistan and Canberra. We have seen the human God who will not let even death have the last say, but breaks free of its clutches, blazing a trail on which all may follow, from tragedy into newness of life, full of love and hope. When we hear the Bible say that we will see the new human descending on a thunderous cloud with power and great glory, it need not sound like a threatening image to us, because we are the ones who know that the one who comes is the one who has blessed the earth in the past. The glorious, all-powerful new human is also the suffering servant who went to the cross rather than sell out God's love and mercy for us. And that's why we are able to live freely today with confidence and not fear. Not because we know what tomorrow will look like, but because we know that in Jesus, God does not give up on the world. Because we know that there is nothing that can happen to us that can separate us from the love of God, and nothing that we can do that is beyond the reach of God's mercy. Having come to us as Jesus of Nazareth, God promises to come among us as a ruler seated on the clouds, the one who arrives on the clouds, that strange, powerful, cosmic Christ, has a face which is none other than the face that we saw on a baby in Bethlehem. We do not know what the future holds, but we do know who holds the future. We have a future, and it belongs to Jesus. Thanks be to God.